Loading in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
This is episode 47 of the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. Now, I'm a believer that success leaves clues and patterns. And if you're a savvy operator, you'll keep your eye open to these clues, much like a detective working a case, piecing together those common threads to solve the mystery. Now, I can tell you with 100% certainty that restaurant success is not rocket science. It's people science. The Restaurant Freedom Formula is my signature roadmap that can help you break free from where your restaurant is running you. How would more profits and more time for what matters to you change your life? Now, I talked to a restaurant owner the other day. No, he's a single father, and he's trying to turn around his struggling restaurant. Now, get this. It does close to $2 million in sales, and yet his profits are slipping away to almost nothing. Now, I hear these stories all the time, and the sad part is that his solution is to throw more hours into work, hoping that things turn around. Working harder is not the answer. It's working smarter. Now, you've all heard the common saying that you need to work on your business and not in your business. Well, how exactly do you do that? You need a roadmap that will develop the three pillars that all successful restaurants understand: culture, systems, and strategy. Now, I invite you to book a one-on-one call with me personally to discuss where your restaurant is now, where you want to be in 90 days, and then let's create a plan to get you there. Just go to my website at www.therestaurantcoach.com. And remember that it's people that make or break a restaurant. Now, the man who can help shed some insight into those people problems is Eric Cacciatore. He is the host of the most, probably one of the most popular restaurant podcasts out there, Restaurant Unstoppable. Eric has interviewed, I think it's over 690 people for a show, and he has traveled in the last couple of years over 50,000 miles traveling to meet people and share their stories. Now, I've been honored to be a guest on Eric's podcast a couple times, and in today's episode, I really get the pleasure of turning the tables around, and I get to interview him. There are a lot of gold nuggets in this episode, so let's jump in to the interview. Hey, and welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. Today, in a great twist of events, for once, I have the honor and pleasure of having Eric Cacciatore, host of Restaurant Unstoppable, as my guest this time. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I thought it was kind of, you know, I was thinking like, man, who can I have on? You know, I've been on Eric's show quite a few times. How about I have him on my show and we get the, you know, because you interview, how many people have you interviewed now? Honestly,
how many people? I've lost track of how many people, but I'm up to episode 685. There's solo episodes in there. There's been some repeat guests like yourself on there. Mm-hmm. I would say over 600 people, maybe around 550, somewhere in that range.
Amazing. Thanks. Yeah, and that's definitely why, you know, Restaurant Unstoppable is known as like the melting pot of mentors. There's so much great information. If you have not listened to Restaurant Unstoppable, what is wrong with you? I just have to throw that out there because you are missing a wealth of opportunity to learn. And I'm telling you, podcasts are the greatest way to absorb information. You know, you're driving to work, you're doing some, you know, doing something in the office, you know, throw on a podcast and take some of that time that's kind of dead time and turn it into learning time. That's the best way.
Yeah, man. It's changed my life. I mean, it's because of podcasts and the power of podcasting that I started the podcast. I'm sure I'll get into the backstory later, but,
Why don't we give people like a little background how you got started and down this crazy kind of journey and what you got you into the restaurant industry. I mean, I know when I first met you, when you first started doing the show, you were still working at restaurants.
Yeah, man. And you know, it's like to answer your first question, how I got into the industry, my parents opened a restaurant when I was 3 years old, and they had that restaurant until I was 13 years old. So they had a solid 10-year run. So basically the restaurant was my daycare, which turned into my after school job. I think I was working in the restaurant when I was like nine, at least 9 years old. Saturday mornings I was up at 5 a.m. with my dad driving to the fucking restaurant with the windows down in New Hampshire, January, so he could have his morning cigarette. I just remember being so cold at 5 o'clock in the morning, standing on milk crates, chopping 50 pounds of potatoes. I had good knife skills at the age of 10. I'll tell you that much.
That's nice.
But yeah, grew up in the industry. Got to, you know, live it, and was there for 10 years. My parents, they closed a restaurant, continued to work in the industry thereafter through high school, college, and became a commercial pilot. Did that for 8 years, resigned at the age of 26, went back to school for marketing and hospitality because that's where my heart was, where my passion was. And it was while in school, my professor assigned basically podcast to us. He's the first day of a sales class, because one of my marketing classes, sales class, this is the first class I had with this professor. We're still good friends to this day. He walked into the room before he was saying anything. He addressed the class and said, you know, who here listens to podcasts? Maybe one person raised their hand out of like 12 students. It was a night class, small class. And he walked out of the classroom, and he, you know, in like classrooms, there's like that wooden door, and there's like that little skinny window that you can see through with like the wires through it, like the cross wires through it. You could see him through that little window. He looks left, he looks right, and he goes, "You've got to be fucking kidding me." And he walked back into the room, and he's like, "You're missing a huge opportunity to learn whatever it is you want to learn. Your assignment is to go home and to research three topics and to bring a podcast and discuss a podcast for each one of those topics." So I researched, I think it was hospitality, marketing, and or maybe it was restaurants, marketing, and personal growth, or something along those lines. As you can imagine, tons of personal growth, tons of hospitality, but like zero marketing. Zero, tons of marketing, tons of personal growth, zero hospitality or restaurant podcast. And that was kind of my first clue.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll keep on going if you let me. So I figured a podcast was there.
Hold on a second. I just got to back up for a second. You were a commercial pilot.
Yeah. It's kind of scary, right?
That's where you got the great voice, you know, because you got that pilot voice.
I joked that I got away from aviation because I couldn't grow a beard. That wasn't allowed, so it just wasn't right for me.
Wait, don't let you have a beard as a pilot?
No, it's not allowed. You can only have a mustache, which is even more trashy in my opinion.
That's really, yeah, that's like going back to 70s porn, you know? Nothing like an old classic. I remember, like, you know, when I was in pararescue, a lot of I went through pararescue in the 80s, and a lot of the instructors had like that big, you know, big bushy, you know, Tom Selleck Magnum PI mustache, which I remember I tried growing one and it was pathetic. I was like 18 at the time. It was the worst mustache ever. So
I might do, maybe this November will be my Movember. Was it Mustache Movember?
You're going to do a mustache only?
Maybe. I don't know.
Let it really grow out and like get it like super long where you can like, you know, use that, you know, that wax, you know, and get that like that curly kind of evil sinister kind of mustache going.
We'll see. No promise.
All right. Well, Eric was so kind to be on the show today, and he actually was very open to what I call kind of my dirty dozen questions.
Nice.
So we're going to start today. And remember, this is an adult themed podcast, so the F-bombs probably will fly.
Yes, they will. You know,
they already have. So anyway, all right. Question number one, what is your one word or quote that you aim to live by?
You know, this is one that has been serving me well recently. Live to serve is the quote, kind of the mentality that I get into. I have a lot of imposter syndrome, as you can imagine, telling restaurant owners how to run their restaurants. I don't think I'm telling them, but I'm you know, through other people telling them. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of pressure to kind of have the answers, right? So to get out of that mindset of imposter syndrome, to take the attention off of me, I just remind myself that my job is to serve. And yes, when you have that mentality of exist to serve and make it about everybody else, it's amazing how you can just shed that unnecessary, I don't know, self-awareness and just get out there and live to serve. It's so powerful.
That is awesome. What is one thing you think restaurants can do today to improve their business?
I think, you know, self-awareness. I think at the peak of emotional intelligence is self-awareness. And yes, I think we like to blame other things. This is, we're not successful because of fill in the blank, right? This, that. But the truth of the matter is 99.9% of the time, it's you're the problem.
Yep.
And being self-aware and talking to your people and asking them what you can do better and just getting that perception of who you are. Perception is reality, right? So you got to work on what your perception is by you know, listening and reflecting. And I think this is so powerful.
That's true. That's so true. Have you ever had an interview with someone and you just like, it's like, oh my God, this is not going to go well.
Yeah. You know, but the truth of the matter is, I try to remove myself from the equation because mm-hmm. I've had times where people are like, where I'm talking to somebody, I'm like, there's no connection here. Like, this isn't a good interview. Like, this is going to bomb. But then I publish it anyway, because I feel like it's not my job to judge whether or not it's a good conversation. Because what might not be a good conversation to me, somebody else might find a ton of value from that. That's so true. I've had episodes that I published that I thought were crap. And then I get emails from like, that really resonated with me. That was so helpful. So I try to just be like the middleman. I try to remain unbiased, and I try not to influence. I'm a platform for the industry. I'm just a stage, you know. Yeah. I don't get to decide what people say. I mean, that would be inauthentic to the mission, you know?
Awesome. You know, that's an important thing to do also with any kind of business, is to be able to learn how to detach, you know,
yeah.
and separate mm-hmm. yourself from it. Not get you know, it's hard sometimes, especially when it is your business. It is hard.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's like everything. I think we like try to think the world's black and white, but the truth of the matter is, like, it's good to like detach yourself from the business, but at the same time, it's good to inject yourself into the business mm-hmm, and to have mm-hmm. the business be an extension of your core values, your beliefs. But it's like, there's no one answer. There's usually a balance of things. Like, it's like a mixture of a bunch of different theories that you have to like pull out the Swiss Army knife and figure out what makes sense for your, am I making any sense right now?
No, you are. Exactly. No, I reference a lot of times that Kenny Rogers, the gambler, you know when to hold him, know when to fold him, know when to walk away, and know when to fire that lazy fuck in the corner.
Yeah. And I found the more I learned, the more I realized I don't friggin' know. And it's like,
yeah.
It's so frustrating.
All the time. That's why I love doing the podcast too. I learn from all the guests I have on. I'm like you, an avid, you know, I like reading. I love podcasts. I love audiobooks. I mean, Audible. I think you have a link on your website, right, for Audible?
Yeah. So Audible is a great, I think everybody should be listening to audiobooks, especially in this industry. We don't have the time or the energy at the end of a 12-hour day to really sit down and ingest a good piece of content. But if you can drive to work and listen to a book or have the book rolling while you're doing your prep and bringing your people into that experience of learning, making it like mandatory that, hey, listen to this book with me, you know, let's grow together as a team. I think it's so powerful.
Yes. And for all those people who keep hounding me about, you know, when are you going to do an audio version of Your Restaurant Sucks? I am in the process. Finally, I have secured a studio here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I will be recording the first book, Your Restaurant Sucks. So yes, it will be available soon on Audible. So for all these people who have been waiting, it's coming, it's coming. All right. So question number 3, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life in this past year?
I'm going to break that down to like 2 answers. Okay. Brutal in like honest transparency and the subtle art of not giving a fuck are 2 things I've been trying to leverage more. You know, I think at the end of the day, there's so much power in revealing your weaknesses and mm-hmm. revealing your vulnerabilities and just being real and open and honest with people. It creates trust, and the speed of trust is amazing. And when people trust you, I like to say my unique selling proposition is trust. Yes. And you know, by being just open and honest and like literally showing your work and taking people through your thought process. Mm-hmm. There's so much value in that. And there's just so much, I don't know, good juju in that. And then the idea of this, the subtle art of not giving a fuck is, you know, get a turn. And this is a line from Jason Harris's book, the Soulful Art of Persuasion, who I just recently had on the show. Author of the Soulful Art of Persuasion and the CEO of Mechanism Advertising out of New York City. Mm-hmm. You got to turn and face the strange. You got to be the weirdest version of yourself, because that most unique weird version of yourself is the most authentic self. Nice. And in this world, you know, you got to stand out. You can't be like everybody else. You got to be unique. You got to be yourself. So that's what I've been trying to do, is kind of embrace who I am mm-hmm. and open up and share some things about myself that I'm weird about, that I shouldn't be weird about, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Totally makes sense. Hey, I'm just going to throw a little curveball here. What's like one core value you live by?
One core value I live by. Man, there's a bunch and it's hard to pick one.
Throw a couple.
open-minded is something that I've been trying to, because what we were talking about earlier is that the world is not black and white. And the more I learn, the more I realize that there's just so much information out there. There's so much knowledge out there, and not one human being has the capacity to handle it all. So instead of trying to think you have all the answers, you're freaking retarded if you think that's probably not the most politically correct way of saying anything these days. But the thing is, like, you can't have all the answers. You can't. And there's no way that any human mind can process at all. So we just have to be open-minded. And, you know, perspective is huge. And once you understand the law of, like, relativity, it changes everything, man. You got to be open-minded, you know? And so that's a huge core value. And the other one is that I'm trying to be better about is collaboration. You know, we're tribal animals. We're meant to be in a pack. We can't do it alone. So recognizing, being self-aware, recognizing your strengths and weaknesses, and then leaning on those who are strong where you're weak, you know, and knowing that you can't do it alone, and that mindset of abundancy and, like, you know, is just so powerful. So collaboration is the other big one that I'm working
on. Very cool. Now, okay. Now this next one's going to be kind of difficult, because I kind of look at, like, podcast episodes are like children. You have 600 kids. Okay. All right. Recommend your favorite podcast episode from Restaurant Unstoppable. Your favorite.
So, I mean, there's so many good ones out there. But there's one that I go to time and time again, and it's probably just because of one quote, if I'm being completely honest. And this is going back, this is episode 177, Octavio Mantilla from the Best Restaurant Group. And there's a quote, his opening quote was, you can accomplish most anything in life as long as you don't mind who gets the credit. And that's a quote from Harry Truman. And I think that quote is just so powerful. Because it takes a tribe, you know? It takes a tribe. Yeah. You can't do it by yourself. And it's not about you. It's about everybody else, right? It's about the mission. So you can accomplish anything, most anything in life, so long as you don't mind who gets the credit. I just love that quote.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Episode 177?
177. Head over to restaurantunstoppable.com/177.
Yeah, and I'll put the link in the show notes for everybody, too. And then the next question, part two of that is, which one is the most popular? What's the one that has had the most downloads ever?
I'm not sure what the total downloads are right now, but the last time I checked, it was episode, I can't remember the episode number. It was Horst Schulze, the second time I had him on the show. And Horst Schulze is I think it was the president of the Ritz-Carlton for the majority of the Ritz-Carlton's career. He's moved on from the Ritz-Carlton.
Does he have a book out now? He has a book out now, doesn't he?
Does, yes.
Yeah. Excellence or something like that, right?
It's in the show notes if you go to that episode. I'm looking over to my shoulder right now because I'm pretty sure I have the book on the shelf. I just can't see it. But in that book, in that episode, it's the episode where we go over his 24 standards of service. So these are standards that he used and implemented in his business, or in the Ritz-Carlton. And the cool thing about these standards is every day he would go over one of the standards during his pre-shift or whatever, not a pre-meal, but their daily meeting. Yeah. They would go over one of these 24 standards of service and reflect on that and have somebody share when they implemented this. What I'm trying to get at is it's not only a great episode, but it's just that mentality of, like, whatever our standards are, you can't just write them down once and forget about them. They need to be refreshed, brought to the surface, like, every day, literally every day.
Every day.
They go through all 24 standards and then they start from one again. So 1 through 24, when you get to 24, the next day they go to one, and they're just constantly. But because of that, like, everybody knows what the expectation is. Everybody has that picture of perfection of what the job done right looks like. And it's so powerful.
Yeah, if people are listening today, I'm telling you, listen to this episode, if you take one thing away, do that. Yeah. Get your standards, get your expectations, write them down and go over them. I always tell people all the time, do not train your team until they get it right. Train them until they cannot get it wrong. That's, like, one of my powerful things I tell people. Don't train them until they get it right. Train them until they can't get it wrong. Amen, we train, brother. You know, we do that all the time. We train them one or two times, you know, they know how to do it. And don't stop there. Stop until they can't get it wrong. No other way but your way. Mm. Yeah. That's a great one.
Add to that.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. Okay. So who is your biggest influence?
You know, today, the podcast I'm listening to a lot, that's kind of where I go to get my sources. Mm-hmm. It's like my church, you know. I wake up, it's part of my morning routine. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm being influenced by by thought leaders. Joe Rogan's huge to me right now. Rogan and Jordan Harbinger. And the reason why I picked those two, Joe, I love his curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And I love his not give a fuckness.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, you know, he knows what he believes in. He doesn't give a fuck. And I think that can be like, he's like the embodiment of what that done right looks like. And that again, that open mind. I feel like his show is just kind of to feed his curiosity, and he's just curious about the world. And he gets people with different opinions on his show, and he stays very open-minded during those conversations. And it's not about I'm right. It's about, well, I just want more information. I want the feed. Yeah. I want to get perspective. He's all about perspective. Right. I think that's, I want to kind of implement some of that into what I do with my work. I think we could use that in our industry, that open-mindedness, that perspective. And then Jordan Harbinger, because I think what he stands for is like the long game, building relationships, not trying to get new relationships, but networking with the relationships you have. And I think that what he's doing is kind of at the leading edge of what's happening with just the human mind, studying the human mind and how we function. And I think to be successful in business, you got to know how the mind works. You got to understand, it's like an engine in a car. You got to understand what's going on. And when you can recognize what's happening in the moment in your own mind, you can override it, you know? And I think that's just such an edge, you know, to understand how you function and how others function. At the end of the day, this is all about relationships. This industry is all about relationships. So you got to know how people work.
Yeah. You've heard me say it more than once, you know, all business problems are people problems.
Exactly. Yeah.
And all people problems are communication problems.
Yeah. Our good friend, Mike Canino.
I love Mike. Show.
Yeah. Huge in culture. He wrote the book, literally.
Yeah. He wrote the book.
Yeah. And he said, I asked him, like, what is the essence of culture? What is culture? And it's relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's why you just have to know how to manage those relationships. You have to know how people work.
People ask me all the time, like, you know, what's the difference between brand and culture? And here's my simple definition. Brand is what your guests think of your restaurant. Culture is what your team thinks of your restaurant.
Mm. But do you think there should be a line between the two? Do you think that?
No, they feed each other. It's like, I always describe it as like a yin yang symbol. They feed each other. They're symbiotic. They can't exist without each other.
Yeah. I love it.
They have to feed each other. If it's a continuous circle of energy. They feed each other. Without it, you know, one will suffer and die.
The way I see it, like, and I love that idea of like a circle of energy, like a like infinity, right? It just keeps going on.
It is
also like pulling in the same direction. Is our brand aligned with our culture? Are these the same thing or are these diverging? You know, I think there's another way, like leadership. You got to pull right. Everything needs to go in the same direction.
Yeah, exactly. But open-mindedness, you were so right about being open-minded, you know, and that Joe Rogan, he is awesome. One of my things I love telling people is that, you know, closed minds, closed restaurants, you know, gotta be open.
I love it. Especially to your people, your employees, you know, their perspective, you know, perspective is reality or what's that saying?
Perception is projection. It's an NLP term.
Perception is reality.
Yeah. NLP has it. It's one of the presuppositions of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. They say perception is projection. Whatever you think is true, it's true for you.
It's true. And it's scary because that goes back to relativity. You know, it's all relative to each individual. So whatever's true to somebody else, it's just like, you know? So when you figure it out, you're like, I don't know shit.
There we go, this whole quantum realm here.
Oh, don't get me started.
So let me ask you, what do you think is the most common reason restaurants fail?
I think it's a severe underestimation of what it takes to be successful. I think that we're so romanticized by the industry and we have this vision of like, you know, I'm guilty of it, dreaming of like, oh, the perfect restaurant. I'm going to be able to do what I love every day and it's going to be amazing and people are going to love me and it's just going to be like, the reality is it's going to kick you in the ass hard. And it's going to kick you hard for like at least a year until you put that time into to fine tune your systems to fine tune your recipes to figure out who you are. You don't know who you are on day one. You figure out who you are after this industry chews you up and spits you out, you know? And I think it's that severe underestimation. Is that even a, am I making it up right now? Yeah.
Let's go with it.
You know, underestimating what it takes. And I think that is a big part of it. I don't think I need to add any more.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, honestly, to compound off of that, with my show Restaurant Unstoppable, I hope that I help more people. I talk more people out of the industry than I do help people become successful in the industry. Because I think when I first started, it was a little woo woo. And then over time, I'm like, well, these successful people that I'm having on the show, a lot of them, you can tell, like, you can see it in their eyes. Mm-hmm. You can feel it in their voice that they're hurting right now. And the world thinks they're successful, but you know, even these successful people are like feeling it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give false realities. I don't want to project. I don't want to feed into that romance,
right.
You know, I want to be real and talk people out of it. And like, there's too many people in our industry already. There's way too many restaurants. Do we really need more? Like, no. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
No, definitely. Yeah. If you're not 100% know what the reality is, it will chew you up.
And that's helping somebody. Talking them out of it is helping somebody, you know? So
I always think the most valuable conversation I can have with someone who's thinking about starting a restaurant is have a real heart to heart talk about.
Yeah.
If they should do it. And I've told people, you shouldn't do this.
Exactly.
Save your money.
Good. That's a service. You know, that's a
service. Yeah,
for sure.
All right. This next one is my favorite question of the interview. What is your favorite curse word?
Fuck. you know, there's just, it's like an exclamation point. That's how I see it. And, but I will say that it can be overused. I think there's a lot of power in curse words in the sense that they deliver a point. If you want to get like you know, I'm trying to be better about this. I curse often, but but you know, when you're like just even in the show, like I've been trying to replace like fuck with fudge or you know anything just to kind of take some of the edge off of it. So when I really want to deliver a point,
right?
You know, you drop the F, you drop the bomb, right? Mm-hmm. And that gets kind of shocks people, and it's a powerful use in communication. And yeah, I think you should. Even with your teams, maybe it's not professional to curse, depending.
Yeah, like your restaurant is. Yeah, like you said, you can definitely overuse it. I use it, you know, I use it to accentuate a point that I'm really, yeah. You know, I'm trying to make a point home. And I always tell people too that I use it, you know, kind of harsh language like that, or I use F bombs. I use language like that to challenge and shake up your state. And I never do it to degrade or disrespect anybody. I never say like, you know, fuck you. No, it's just, you know, if I say fuck, it's like, well, you know, what the fuck?
Well, you test it sometimes. If you're addressing a room and you see people drifting and not paying attention, they're clearly not engaged, drop a hard fuck and watch the head snap. You know, like it's powerful. It's maybe some people are like, oh, Eric and his potty mouth, but yeah, I don't know.
I think if you use it properly, it's not too bad. I think probably my favorite is like just say, you know, what the fuck?
I love it.
Or like this one thing I'll do. I'll like go to somebody in their restaurant and go, you got my camera? You got your phone? Yeah. I go, you should take a picture of this. And I go, why? I go, because if anyone has ever asked you if you've seen a clusterfuck, you got a picture of one.
You're that picture of
that's perfection. A clusterfuck right
yeah.
there.
Yeah. I love it.
So besides, you know, commercial pilot, what's another job or career you thought about going into?
Dog shit pickup service. Yeah. When I was probably 24 years old, before when I was working a desk job this is back in like, I don't know, 2005. When did I graduate college? 2008, 2009. The aviation industry was just tanking and it was impossible to get a job. So I was working as a crew source representative for a fractional company, kind of like a charter company, where I would work with the pilots and help set up their customs and their crew meals and their hotels and just kind of like an extension of the crew. During that time, I was thinking to myself, man, everybody hates picking up shit. Like their dog shit. Like, it's one of those things where like nobody likes picking up dog shit. You could hire like a high school crew, right? Like a bunch of young people, be like, here's your route, go pick up dog shit. And I feel like it would be, I think people do it to it's a legitimate service. You can make good money. Since that idea, I've seen other people do it. And there should be an app, a dog shit app. Like there's all these dog shit, or there's dog walking apps. Like why not just have a dog shit app? I think there's something there.
At first I thought you were joking.
No, man, I'm fucking serious.
Okay, that's probably the most original career I've ever heard of right there.
You I put win. That on a platter for you guys.
I'm gonna make a platter. Most original bandwidth. Most original alternate career I've ever heard of. Yeah, that's a great one.
Low stress.
So looking into 2020, it's the beginning of the year and stuff like that. What do you think is going to be the biggest issue restaurants are going to struggle with this year?
The biggest, I think, it's going to be a continuation of what the biggest challenge has been, which is labor, trying to find people.
Definitely.
There's more and more restaurants opening. There's more and more retail space not working. So what these companies are doing, these real estate owners are doing, is trying to put restaurants into these spaces. And it's just, we're hitting a point where there's just not enough people to support the demand for restaurants.
Yes.
And I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon. I think what you're going to start seeing a lot more of, which is exciting, is that you're going to see a lot more specialty shops, and you're going to see a lot more collaboration, because there's definitely a demand for quality, right? But there's a shortage of ability to produce that quality. Yeah. So what you're going to start seeing is a fragmented food system, where you're going to see hyper-focused collaboration amongst communities. So say if your passion's pasta, or your passion's bread making, or your passion's fill in the blank, you're going to see a lot more restaurant owners outsourcing to these small mom and pop craftspeople, which is, I think, a friggin' awesome thing. And that's another way to fill that retail space. You don't have to be a restaurant. I mean, I think you're going to see craftsmanship come back. And the other reason why I think you're going to see craftsmanship come back is because people increasingly, the market wants an experience more than ever. And I think that we underestimate the story as being an experience. And when we have people that have these passions and they can share those stories of how passionate they are, that feeds into the experience. Yeah. And I just think you're going to see more and more of that. And I think it's a really good thing.
So can I do a little segue here? What do you think about ghost kitchens?
I think they're interesting. There's a part of me that thinks it's interesting and it's creative, but I don't like the idea of removing the people from the business.
Yeah.
Just because it feeds into this transactional society that I just don't really want to see. I don't want to see us go in that direction. I like that people should know who's making their food. I feel like we're so detached from each other. I think it's probably one of those things that feeds into one of the mental health issues that we're seeing, is that nobody has, we need to be seen. We need to be valued, right? It's one of our needs, right above security. You know, it's food and shelter, then it's security, and then it's, am I a part of something? Am I seen? Am I recognized? And when you don't get seen, you don't get recognized, it messes with your mental health. And I think that we need to lean into that. I think we need to be much more mindful of that. Maybe I'm reading into it too much.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it takes away from what dining is about. I mean, I always say, in the United States, we tend to eat. In other countries, like in Europe, we go to dine. I mean, when I go, go to Hospitality Innovation Planet everywhere, and I speak there, I mean, when I'm with the team, Team USA, and we're out talking, I mean, we go to dinner. I mean, it's a 4-hour event, It's like, and you totally lose track of time.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it feeds into that transactional society. And I would like us to get away from that and use technology to support one another. I don't know. Like, this is one of those things where I probably could be more open-minded, and there's probably more perspective that I need to gather. Maybe I should, Ghost Kitchens has been around for what, 2 years now?
A couple years.
So I'm sure there's some people out there that are killing it that I can get on the show and learn from, giving me their perspective. So if you're listening to this, you know who that person is.
Yeah.
Hit me up, eric@restaurantunstoppable.com. I'd love to get them on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know where they are, because they're ghost kitchens. You don't know where they are. You don't know who they are.
They're ghosts.
Jackasses.
Jackasses hiding in the corners. Dark kitchens.
Yeah.
All right. So what's one thing you're not very good at?
I like to say that I'm 100% a why guy and not the best how guy. So Simon Sinek calls it a why guy versus being a how guy. What the heck is his name there? Gary Vaynerchuk calls it, being in the dirt versus being in the clouds. And I live in the clouds, man. I'm a why guy. I'm a dreamer. I'm a motivator. I see the big picture, and I'm not good at building it. It's not to say that I am afraid to get my hands dirty, because I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty and get into the dirt, but I'm not necessarily the architect. I'm not the technician. I'm not the person who's good at the details, and I recognize that about myself, which is one of the reasons why I'm trying to be more, trying to slow down and work on relationships, because I want to take Restaurant Unstoppable to the next level, and I realize I can't do it alone. So
in behavioral dynamics, you're considered, I would consider you a high extrovert. High extroverts get energy from people.
Yeah.
You know, in the DISC profile, you'd be, you know, high extrovert, get energy from people, great at, you know, visionary motivation, coaching, developing, you know, inspiring people, stuff like that. But yeah, but like most people that are high extrovert, you know, the attention to detail and follow through tends to be one of our, I'm high extrovert too, you know, and yeah. I have to set myself up for success by using technology. I use technology like crazy. I use reminders. I use Siri as a, I mean, she's like my personal, you know, assistant to the max. Right. And I always use her, like, remind me to do this when I get home, do this when I get to this place. And, you know, if you use technology, she can kind of keep you on track. But I'm like you. Yeah. I get energy from people.
Yeah. It's, which is funny because, you know, like my, the past 2 years of my life, I've driven over 50,000 miles, like around the country, right? Like, cause I'm the kind of person that rather drive literally across the country and sit across the table from you than to do a remote interview. Just because I excel in person. Mm-hmm. You know, I need that energy. I need to feel the energy from the person sitting across from me. And I've been, it's ironic because I've never met so many people in my life in such a short period of time. So many great people, incredible people, achieved people, amazing, like people that I want to surround myself with, but I've never been more alone because I'm so transient, because I'm just like here. Right. There's no consistency, no. And I think that to kind of just agree with what you're saying, like, it's taken a toll on me, to be completely honest, like to be so isolated, not to mention I put myself on this island because I'm trying to protect my audience constantly, that I'm like turning people away. Like I see myself as a filter, and this is not healthy, you know?
Exactly.
I don't know. This is turning into a therapy session.
What? It always does. Trust me. Oh, what's one hot trend that's going on right now that you don't think is going to make it till the end of the year?
All right. Here comes my favorite word. Fuck trends.
Fuck trends.
Trends can be powerful. There's like micro trends that you can leverage on your menu to kind of stay like relevant. I see that. But at the same time, I think people chase trends, and I think that's very dangerous. If there's a menu item like avocado toast, you know, that people want, then put it on your menu, you know, put it on your, like, you know, depending on what kind of, if it works for your concept. But don't open an avocado toast restaurant. You know what I'm saying? Like, because that trend is going to come and go by the time you get financing. Are you really that passionate about avocado toast that you're going to be able to show up every day and live avocado toast? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Trends can be powerful, but at the same time, like, don't chase trends, be the trend. What is your passion? What is the thing that you don't, that you don't see people taking advantage of, that you can be the best and go create something, go stir up, life, you know, go stand out, go be the trend. Don't follow the pack, you know, zig when everyone else zags, you know, right. Zig Ziglar. Is that Zig Ziglar or is it just Ziglar?
You know, here's my thing about trends. If you're going to follow a trend, or if you're going to start do a trend, at least research a trend. I went to a restaurant in Arizona one time, and they had avocado toast on the menu, and I actually kind of like avocado toast.
Me too.
Here's what I got. I got a plate. It had toast and had a half of avocado on there. That was it.
Doctor it up a little bit.
It's like, I just kind of went with a theory that, oh, they're doing a deconstructed avocado toast. That's
yeah, right. No, I feel you. I mean, I do. I'm not going to be completely naive and say that there's no value in paying attention to trends. I see the value, but don't be consumed by it. I mean, that comes back to the world's not black and white.
Right, right. You know,
like, it's not clear and cut. Pay attention, but don't make your life chasing trends. Yeah. Unless you're a ghost kitchen.
And then what do you think about plant-based?
You know, I think that, oh man, you're opening a fucking can of worms.
Right, you know, now. Me.
I think obviously plant-based diets are better, or not completely. Well, I mean, be more specific about the question. Are you talking like vegan or like?
No, I'm talking about plant-based, plant-based burgers and meats.
Okay. So one of my issues with these plant-based burgers and meats is that people are arguing that it's better for the environment to eat these plant-based burgers and meats. And maybe yes, but that's also like saying smoking Marlboro Lights is better than smoking Marlboro Reds. Exactly. And the reason why I say that is the type of farming that is necessary to produce this type of plant-based burger is like mass production farming that is not good for the environment. That is arguably just as bad as farming cattle, because you're killing the natural ecosystem to supply this type of demand. Soybean farming, corn, like it's like that kind of like, it's not good for the environment. It's killing the natural ecosystems for like the ecosystems that we don't even notice, the ecosystems right. below the earth, you know, like what happened to the Great Plains, you know, that used to be like a robust. Massive yeah. ecosystem mm-hmm. that we just wasn't on our radar because we couldn't see it with our naked eye, but the organisms that live below the earth, and it's all tied together, you know, everything is so tied together. What we need to do, the argument shouldn't be plant-based burgers versus burger or meat-based burgers. Yeah. It should be, how do we fragment the food system and how do we support local farmers and how do we get away from this centralized food system? Like, we need to break away from that altogether, in my personal opinion. And I think that should be the conversation. And it's just like a mute argument, like right now, like with these plant-based burgers. I would like to see them go, I mean, plant-based burgers, great, but don't buy the mass produced burger. Go to the local like person that's doing it, you know, yeah. and doing the make sure that they're sourcing their ingredients locally. Like, and that should be the argument.
Cool. And what is your best tip for getting the most out of your day?
I think it's really important. It can't be underestimated, the significance of a morning routine. I know that's of like a really common answer to that question. But
it's like my book. I have my little booklet, Outstanding Mindset. It's all about setting up your day for success with a morning.
Yeah. And I think you can't underestimate, well, you know, first and foremost, if your morning routine is about taking care of you, then that's really good, because you need to set yourself up for success every day before you can start dedicating your day to setting others up for success. Mm-hmm. And that looks like, you know, getting your, you know, if it's like exercise or whatever it is for you, right. For me, when I'm humming, my morning routine is the first thing I do is I wake up, I drink 2 glasses of water. Yes. I get at least like, I aim for 1,000 calories, right? Whether that's a 5 mile walk or a 20 mile bike ride or whatever it is, you know, that's not that bad. 20 miles on a bike is pretty easy. But take care of yourself. So drink water, exercise, and then I try to get some type of meditation in, whether it's just being still, reflecting on my to-do list, prioritizing what's going to move me ahead, and staying like reflecting on my values, my mission, to make sure I'm going in the right direction. Just living intentionally. Yes. And when I'm really humming, that includes journaling and also educating, like giving myself to time in the morning. I usually knock out 2 birds with 1 stone when I'm on my bike, because I'm listening to podcasts. So I'm doubling down. So the other thing is, when you have that morning routine, it's amazing how much energy you save, because you don't have to think about what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And and this is something I learned the hard way over the past 2 years, driving all over the nation. It was so hard to get into a routine, because my days, everything was constantly different. Yeah. And you don't realize how much energy you exert in being in a different space all the time. So if you can get into that routine, the other thing I'll say is, blocking time.
Yep.
Time blocking. And when tomorrow today is something I love to say. So before, you know, before you go to bed, like, what's tomorrow look like? Put a plan together so you can wake up and just get right into it when you're your best self. You know?
Awesome. Yep. Definitely.
Was this longer than usual?
No, this is good. It's about average, actually. Yeah. Okay, good. So if people want to get a hold of you, how do they find you?
Best way to get a hold of me is my email, Eric, E-R-I-C, at restaurantunstoppable.com, restaurantunstoppable.com. You can find me on Instagram, Eric Cacciatore, that's E-R-I-C-C-A-C-C-I-A-T-O-R-E, like the chicken, Cacciatore. And I just started a new Facebook group, you guys. I think you're in the group, right?
Yeah, I'm in the group, yeah. It's awesome. Yeah, tell them about it.
Unstoppable restaurant owners and operators. And my hope for this group, thank you. And it's just starting. I mean, it's only 120 people. It's not the biggest group, but I'm hoping that it becomes the most curated group. And I want it to be a group of my past guests, my listeners. And I want to be a sounding board for that. Or I want that board to be a sounding board for what I do going into the future. Collaboration, right? I don't have to do it alone anymore. I need to listen to my listeners. And come join the group.
Tribe, man. Build a tribe, baby. Absolutely. That's what it's all about. So we'll have links. I'll have links in the show notes to a Restaurant Unstoppable website. Also, how to get a hold of Eric. Plus, I'll also have a link to a couple of books that he mentioned. And also, I'll have the links to the shows that he mentioned that were his favorite. and also the most popular. And also, I will put in a link to the Facebook group for
Thank you so much.
Again,
and, hey, I want to say, sorry, before you sign off, when I first started my podcast, it was people like you that some of the first people I found that mm-hmm. really inspired me, and to know that I've earned a seat in a conversation with you is like, it's really just, it's honoring, you know, it means a lot that you invited me here. And it's, thank you very much. I just want to be present in this moment and acknowledge you,
I appreciate you, man. You've done such amazing work with this industry to help raise awareness. And you really, I mean, your mission is really to help people, and you really want people to have a better life and have a better restaurant. And that's my mission too. And anything I can do to support you, man, I'm just telling you, you have a great, great attitude. You have a great outlook on life, and I'm honored to call you a friend.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I cut you short. You were trying to sign off before, and
that's all right. We sign off whenever we want. Hey, you know, this is my show. I do what the fuck I want, right?
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.therestaurantcoach.com or download episodes at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify.